She Made Me Laugh, My Friend Nora Ephron by Richard Cohen, is a hilarious, blunt, and poignant recollection of Cohen's decades-long friendship with Nora Ephron, the widely beloved writer, screenwriter, producer, and film director who was embraced by literary New York, celebrated by Hollywood, and adored by friends and fans across the world. Richard Cohen is a nationally syndicated columnist for The Washington Post. He has covered national politics and foreign affairs since 1976. Again, the name of the new book is She Made Me Laugh. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Richard Cohen to the roundtable this morning. Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure entirely.
At what point following Nora's death did you know you wanted to write this?
You know, I never knew. Certainly it took a while after she died and for the idea to take shape, and then I walked away from it because a number of people suggested it to me and said, you know, I should do it. Then I thought, no, I'm not going to do it. But then it became, there was sort of like a drumbeat. You've got to do it, you've got to do it, you've got to do it. So it must have been at least a year or a year and a half after she died where I finally said, okay, I'm going to do it. At least I'll give it a shot and see how it goes.
Once you decided to give it a shot, what did you want to accomplish? What was the ultimate goal?
The ultimate goal was to show the world the woman that I loved. She was complicated. I thought she was really cute and funny and sweet. She was also a killer. You know, she was a very complex human being. And to my dismay, and in a certain sense, almost to my fear, as I started digging into it, this woman that I thought I knew extremely well, I mean, I did know her extremely well, really didn't know how big her life was. And there were aspects of her life that I didn't know anything about, and friends that I didn't know about. I mean, she just had a life that kind of kept growing and growing and growing. And once she learned that she had this fatal disease and that she had 6 years or 6.5 years to live, she just put her foot to the floor, and started living like at a rate that, you know, it's very hard for anybody to keep up with, nonetheless somebody who was sick. But the breakfast, lunches, dinners, friends, mentoring people, talking to people, being everybody's, you know, the number of people I talked to who told me Nora was their best friend was just incredible. So, I mean, I don't know, she was a remarkable person, and it was just a great thrill and honor to be her friend. So that's what I wanted to get down on paper.
The early 1970s, you were a reporter at the Washington Post. How did you meet?
We met originally because I was asked by Clay Felker, who was then editing New York Magazine, to do a piece on competing couples. And these were couples who were usually freelance writers, and they competed with one another. Nora was then married to Dan Greenberg, who was a really successful freelance writer. And so Clay asked me to do a piece on Nora and Dan, and Nora wouldn't cooperate. And I didn't blame her. I mean, why should she talk about her private life? But she said when she was coming down to Washington, and said, we'll meet in Washington. Meanwhile, the piece was written. I wrote the piece, and some of it was rewritten, adding things that I didn't know about because I was in Washington, not a New York person. Anyway, she was very unhappy with the piece and attacked me. I mean, really lit into me. And about, I guess a week later, Carl Bernstein, who was my closest friend, called me up and said, very excitedly, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love. And I said, who with? And he said, Nora Ephron. And I said, well, that's the end of our relationship, buddy. And then a day or two later, she showed up at the door of my apartment in Washington with Carl. And she sort of came around from behind him and stuck out her hand. She said, Richard, this will be just like the movies. We started off hating each other. We'll wind up loving each other. And she was absolutely right.
And it happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, it happened very quickly. I mean, I fell for her. And, you know, we had a lot in common. We were a foursome at that time. I mean, Carl and Nora and me and my then wife was an editor at the Washington Star. So we were all journalists. Nora was writing a column for Esquire. She had worked for the New York Post. Carl, of course, had done Watergate and was doing Watergate. and I was at the Washington Post. So we had so much in common. Besides, you know, this is what we did for a living. We lived the journalist life. Watergate was happening. It was an immense story. It was a very thrilling time to be in Washington, and so we hit it off.
And during all of this, she started to find her own success, which, as you point out in the book, I guess was really a surprise to no one.
I think Nora probably could write, could have written in the womb. I mean, she was she was incredibly talented, and she didn't waste a lot of time writing and rewriting. She sort of put it down the first time, although she did write an essay about how she revised, and I know that she revised, but boy, she was fast. But yeah, she had a voice right from the get-go, and the stuff that she was doing for the New York Post, the old New York Post, not the Rupert Murdoch New York Post, but the Dolly Schiff New York Post, no, they were feature stories and little stuff, but you could see that there was a voice there, and you wanted to know more about the writer. And in fact, I cite in the book something she did. There was a flood in the subway, and instead of writing that there was a flood in the subway yesterday on this line or that line, or, you know, and giving all the statistics, she started off the piece by saying, "Why am I standing in water?" And you then take it into the piece by somebody who was making you a part of the story and was living a part of the story. So she early on became a writing personality in New York and got a name for herself. And then also, she had this incredible presence. You know, if you were in the room with her, you knew you were in the room with her, no matter how many other people were in the room. And it's not because she had a loud voice, and it wasn't because she was stunningly good-looking or something of that sort. She just had this thing that we called charisma, and she had it. So people knew of, in a very early age, people in the New York literary world knew of Nora Ephron.
You were a reporter, as I mentioned, for The Post. She very much wanted you, ended up doing this, she very much wanted you to be a columnist.
Yeah, she did. It was her idea. I mean, it's her idea. I mean, I always wanted to be a columnist because I grew up in New York City reading the columnists in the New York Post and other newspapers and wanting to be those guys. I don't ever remember wanting to be anything other than a newspaper person, you know, and wearing a hat with a press card in it and driving the fires and murders and things of that sort. But you know, when I got to the Washington Post, it wasn't like I was going to be a columnist. This was a dream. It was a fantasy more than anything else. And she took me to lunch one day and said, "You have to be a columnist. You can be a columnist," which was a shock to me. And what she realized was that I needed to work for myself, that, you know, sitting on the city desk and taking assignments was not the kind of thing I liked to do. I needed to work for myself. I needed to work things out for myself in a column. And she recognized that. And I think, although I never really knew, that she went to Ben Bradley, who's then the editor of the Washington Post, and suggested me for a column and said, "You ought to look at Richard." And he did. You know, I went out to lunch with him. I asked him to have lunch because I was quitting the paper. I was going to leave. I was so unhappy. And before I had a chance to leave, he offered me a column. So, you know, I thought that wasn't very fair. And now I have to stay. So I stayed.
You talk about her illness in the book, and it was something that for many of her friends, she just kind of dropped out of sight. And at what point were you brought in and found out ultimately what was happening?
Oh, right away. Right away. Nora and I were very close. She told me right away. When I say right away, within, you know, a couple of weeks or so. And she was at that point thinking of going to Seattle for a stem cell transplant. And me and the woman I was then living with, who became very close to Nora also, we were going to go to Seattle just to stay with her. We were very, very close, the four of us. And then it transpired, tragically, that my girlfriend got cancer. So the two of them went through this together, the two cancer victims. Both of them knew the clock was ticking. And they would email in the middle of the night, you know, because you don't sleep. And so they sort of bonded, if that's the right word, over this tragic thing that was happening. But Nora didn't tell anybody else. She told very few other people. I mean, some people knew, of course, but very few. She just was determined to go on with her life. She was determined to be judged by her work and not by her illness, where people wouldn't say to you the first thing they saw you say in the morning, well, how do you feel? How is it? How are you? You know, that consumes your life, and she didn't want that. So she just sort of pretended nothing was happening, and it worked. Nobody knew until the very end. Really, in many cases, until she died, and they found out by reading the obituary. And they felt betrayed. And I understood that. I can understand that. Because, as I said, so many people felt so close to her, and yet the most important thing in her life they didn't know about. But she did it for a good reason. And I think she became amazingly productive as she got sicker and sicker.
Shortly after her death, Lucky Guy, her play, opens on Broadway and was commercially a great success, and critically the reviews were mixed. But did it end up being a good tribute to Nora Ephron?
It did. It ended up being a wonderful the reviews weren't over the top, although some of them were pretty good. It was a good play, but I can't judge it, you know. This was the last work of a woman I loved, and so I'm sorry I get a little still not used to it. And so I loved it. I loved the play. I loved the play because it was Nora. I loved the play because it was Tom Hanks, who's, you know, a good friend of Nora's and a wonderful guy as far as I know. I know him a little bit. And it was about newspapering. It was about the old days, you know, tabloid journalism in New York, which was not my background, and I didn't always think it was the greatest thing in the world. But it makes for great play. It makes for great dialogue. And McAlary was really, in a way, the play was about a columnist, Mike McAlary. He was not my cup of tea, but boy, oh God, the guy was brave. He was physically brave, and he was intellectually brave, and I respected that. And he wrote on some days he wrote the best column imaginable. On other days it made me wince. But, you know, we're never perfect.
What do you hope people ultimately get from reading this tribute?
I don't know. I didn't do it. I want them to love Nora. I want them to appreciate who Nora was. Nora was very courageous. Nora stood up to publishers. Nora risked her job a number of times to write what she thought was the truth, which really was the truth. She was also courageous about herself. She didn't blink at what was happening to her when she was younger and she wasn't the sweater girl that era of worship. She wrote about it. She wrote about not having big breasts. When she got older and her neck started to sag, she wrote about it. She was always confronting the truth and doing it in a way where she was humorous at the same time. She was terrifically gifted at observing herself and writing about herself almost in the third person, but never quite there. She wrote about herself. She wrote I, but the way she wrote that I was as if she wasn't that person. So, when you want to get something out of Nora, It's about courage. It's about, you know, it's also about facing death. It's about facing deadlines. It's about facing employers. It's about facing life. And she was just totally admirable.
And she made you laugh.
She made me laugh so much. I mean, just the two of us walking down the street would laugh and laugh and laugh. But she didn't tell jokes. You know, they were observations. They were witticisms. And a lot of the times you thought that was the smartest thing anybody ever said, and then a day later you'd say to yourself, what did she mean by that? But it was great. She had, you know, I don't know, remember if I put it in the book. I didn't put it in the book, but I talked to Senator Al Franken. Mm-hmm. You know, and he told me about the time that He had gone to some Indian reservation in Minnesota where the Indians, you know, live in dreadful poverty. And he was very moved by what he saw. So then he went to a couple of fundraisers in the New York area, and he described this. And each time he described what he saw, he cried. And the third time he was on Charlie Rose, and he described it again, and he cried again. And Nora called him up and said, "You know, Charlie, when old men cry, it's about narcissism." And he said, "That's the last time I cried." and I know what she meant, because, you know, it's because you identify, you know. And
right.
So it's not about pride. But she would do that. Those kinds of things would just come, you know, rolling out of her mouth all day. It was just a pleasure to be with her. And she was smart. She was about the smartest person I know, or I knew.
The name of the book is She Made Me Laugh, My Friend Nora Ephron. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Richard Cohen, thank you very much for sharing your memories with us. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, She Made Me Laugh, published by Simon & Schuster, by Richard Cohen. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.